morning, good Monday morning to you, and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. It is my privilege to be an instructor in the Eller College for the last 30-plus years and enjoyed homecoming this past weekend. What a wonderful endeavor for us to bring back alumni and to celebrate the great things going on at the University of Arizona. Jump in Tuesday's Monday's theme is wonder, and that's where we celebrate the wonderful things happening, including student projects, student learning, student outcomes, as well as top-level performances by artists and athletes. And especially we look at top-tier research going on with faculty and scientists at the University of Arizona. And there's some winds of change coming about. Our guest this morning is Professor Ilari Pascucci. She is a fellow of the American Astronomical Society. She is in the Department of Planetary Sciences at the University of Arizona. Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Thank you very much for inviting me to your program. I'm really glad to have the chance to tell you about our recent discovery.
Yeah,
doing very well, thanks.
I said I only know one line of Italiano. It's non posso parlare italiano molto bene. So that's all I got. So, hey, tell us about your journey of how you got to the University of Arizona and how you became a planetary scientist in the department at the University of Arizona.
Yeah, thanks. So as you said, I'm Italian, so I was born and raised in Italy. I completed a master in astronomy at the University of Bologna, and that was also the time when the first planets around other stars were discovered. So I got very interested in understanding how these planets could form. Then after the master, I did my PhD in astrophysics at the Max Planck Institute for Astronomy in Germany. And at the end of that period was the time when the Spitzer Space Telescope, which is the precursor of the James Webb Space Telescope, was launched. The University of Arizona was very involved in the development of the instruments and also in the science. And so for me, it was a great opportunity to have the chance to come here and work as a postdoc at that time at the University of Arizona. That was in 2004. And then after a few years of postdoc, I got the chance to move to the Space Telescope Science Institute in Baltimore, and I worked there for a couple of years as instrument scientist to support one of the spectrographs on board of the Hubble Space Telescope. So that was also a really nice time because the astronauts actually went up to repair some of the instruments of the Hubble Space Telescope. So that was an exciting time at the Institute. After a couple of years, I moved back to the University of Arizona as assistant professor in the Department of Planetary Sciences. That was in 2011. So by now I'm a full professor, and I also served for 2 years as associate department head in my department.
That's great. And so your research, which our recent article, Winds of Change, the James Webb Space Telescope Reveals Elusive Details in Young Star Systems. Let's talk first, before we talk about your research, let's talk a little bit about the instrument that's being used, which is the, as you said, the James Webb Telescope. The University of Arizona had a lot to do with the research and the technology that went into that space telescope, and it is a, tell us a little bit about it. It was launched in 2021. Tell us about the telescope itself and why it's kind of unique and different from a land-based telescope.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do that. So as you mentioned, it was launched in 2021. But the nice thing is that it was really a Christmas present. Mm-hmm. It was launched on December 25th, so Christmas Day. And I remember, I mean, it was early morning here in Tucson, so 4 a.m. But of course, I was awake in the bed looking at the launch. And it was amazing that everything really went as planned. So by now, the telescope is up for about 3 years, and it is really an amazing space telescope. It is 6 times larger than its precursor. I said it was the Spitzer Space Telescope. So that means that it is 100 times more sensitive and able to obtain images that are significantly sharper than what was possible with the Spitzer Space Telescope. The University of Arizona was very involved in one of the instruments, which is NIRCam. It's an imager. What we used for our science is NIRSpec, which has also the spectroscopic capabilities.
So this telescope is in its 2 years and 9 months, as you said, and 22 days, as they have on the website. You know, its primary mission is about 5.5 years, and then go on for another 4.5. So a total decade of research being done, but that the expected life of it might be about 20 years, and who knows, maybe even a little bit longer than that if we use some of the previous Voyager spacecrafts are still going long after their life expectancy. So this is providing a good platform for astronomers to see the universe in a very, very robust way, different from what maybe you could do from a land-based telescope.
Absolutely. In particular, the James Webb Space Telescope is observing at wavelengths that are shorter than what we can see with our eyes. And so for those, longer
right.
that we can see with our eyes. So those infrared wavelengths, they can best observe from space, because our atmospheres absorb part of those wavelengths. So in that respect, James Webb is unique. Yeah.
And it's in all telescopes, as you look into the distant, you're looking in not only a long ways away, but you're also looking into the past, because you're seeing things as they were many, many years ago, not necessarily. So things that are close to the Earth and close to the telescope, you know, are in kind of what we would maybe call real time. But the further away you go, the further back in time. And the telescope, the Webb telescope, is being able to see that in infrared. So that gives you a unique picture of the universe. And that's important data, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. For the type of science that I do, we look at the relatively nearby stars, but it's still interesting that those photons that the stars sent were essentially sent, I think I calculated that at some point, were sent during the period of the Roman Empire. So it's
And we're just now receiving that information. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, when we come back after the break, we want to talk about these winds of change and how the James Webb Space Telescope is giving your research some interesting details about young star systems and accretion disks and protoplanetary disks and what is happening in that. So we're talking with Professor Ilaria Pascucci from the Planetary Sciences Department at the University of Arizona about some winds of change. And we'll be back after a break here to talk about some exciting research that's being done with the James Webb Telescope. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Monday Wonder Edition, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona, especially in scientific research. Our guest this morning is Professor Ilaria Pascucci. She is a fellow in the American Astronomical Society. She's the chair of the ExoPag Executive Committee, and she is a full professor in the Department of Planetary Sciences. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So your research with the James Webb Telescope, that you've been looking at some nearby stars and so forth in planetary, you're looking at protoplanetary disks and accretion. Could you explain what a protoplanetary disk is and what accretion means around those stars?
Yeah, of course. So a protoplanetary disk is essentially gas and dust circling around a star. You shouldn't think of this material as being in a spherical cloud, but rather in a flattened pancake-like structure. For the dust, you can think of particles that range in size from fine smoke-like grains up to pebble-like grains, similar to what you might find on the beach. And this is the dust that will eventually assemble into the cores of the planets. And let me tell you, it's an amazing journey. We don't understand all the details of this journey, but it involves a growth of these particles of 10 trillion times in size. Again, 10 trillion times. It's amazing. And then once these planetary cores are massive enough, they can also accrete surrounding gas in the disk to form their atmospheres, like, for instance, in the case of Jupiter and Saturn in our solar system, which are mostly gaseous planets.
And so when that comes together, then you have both kind of, depending on what kind of accretion is happening, you have solid mass, but then you also have gas that creates an atmosphere. So you basically have created a world that is now, floating around in its orbit around this star that where this accretion happened, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So you can form all sorts of planets. You can form planets more like Earth, or larger as Neptune, or even much larger like Jupiter. But there is an important point which is related to the other word that you mentioned, accretion. So what is happening is that we know that not all of the gas that is orbiting around the star is actually going to end up into the planets, because we have observations showing that part of this gas ends up onto the star. So the star is kind of eating up part of this gas from the disk. And so there is a kind of competition between the gas being removed by the star that is accreted onto the star and the time to form gaseous planets like Jupiter. You've got to form them while there is still gas in the disk.
So explain what a disk wind is and how you detected them.
Yeah, so a disk wind is essentially another way to remove material that could possibly end up in the atmosphere of a planet. In this case, the gas is not accreted onto the star, but is really ejected from the disk surface. How is this happening? There are two main forces at play. There is, first of all, photons, so heat from the star that will reach the disk surface and will make the gas to become hot. And so the gas can flow away like, I don't know, you can think of the steam arising from the surface of a cup of hot coffee. So this is one way. But then there is another way, which is through magnetic forces that pull on the ionized gas, which then help drag neutral material away from the disk and creates a stream of gas. Both of these processes produce what we call these winds. But the new thing here is that thanks to the sharpness of these images, we could actually distinguish the nature of the winds, whether it is driven by the photons of the star or the magnetic fields.
And then there's something called the ice skater effect, or angular momentum, as these disks spin in their orbit around the star. There's something called angular momentum. Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, sure. So the angular momentum is a physical quantity associated with every rotating object, because every object has essentially a moment of inertia, meaning that is a resistance to move, times the speed. And when you have, for instance, a skater that is spinning, they also have angular momentum because they are rotating. That's a quantity, a physical quantity that is conserved. So if your body has less resistance, like when you pull in your arms, if you do a spinning, then the speed must increase to conserve the angular momentum. So that's what happened. A planet-forming disk has also angular momentum because it's rotating. So a critical question that is answered in our study is, how can this gas that is accreted onto the star and therefore needs to lose angular momentum, how is this angular momentum being lost? And one way to do that is through the winds, because they carry away the angular momentum. So that's how the things come together.
And this helps solve the longstanding problem of how stars and planetary systems form when they're starting out as gas and dust, and how do they accrete and become planets, and whether they be rocky or gaseous or both. This is a big step towards solving that mystery, correct?
Yeah. So yeah, that explains how a star can get its mass, and at the same time how a disk is losing its mass and is evolving, and therefore how planets are assembling.
So what's next for this research? As you look at protoplanetary disks, what's next on the horizon for you after you look at this research? What do you plan on doing next?
Yeah, so this Wednesday was actually, last Wednesday was actually an important day for our community because it was the deadline to submit new proposals for the James Webb Space Telescope. So, of course, we submitted a proposal to follow up on this finding. And we think that the next big thing to do will be to expand the sample. We observed only four objects. And so now we need to see, is this common? And also we want to target the most common stars in the galaxy, which are the stars that are smaller than our sun. So hopefully the proposal will be accepted and we'll have more data.
Right. And it's kind of, I say cool in parentheses, it's kind of neat that that you got some data from the James Webb Space Telescope. Of course, astronomers all around the world are competing for data. And of course, some data is used for multiple things and multiple studies. But it's kind of neat to have the James Webb Space Telescope provide you with some research and data that is usable. And hopefully you'll get some more time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you mentioned, it is actually quite challenging to get time. The success rate is only one out of seven proposals is accepted. So it's quite challenging, but I was really happy that in the first round, I got two programs as principal investigator, and in the second round, I got a third one. But the most rewarding part of all is really analyzing the data and interpreting the data with other scientists who really want to better understand and advance our knowledge in the topic.
That's great. I have to do a little point of personal privilege here. I did have the good fortune when 1979, when I was at the University of Arizona, I got to go to Florence, Italy and study for a summer. And one of the great side trips of that was to go down to Castel Gandolfo and the Pope's house and the observatory there, and of course there's a big connection between the Vatican Observatory and the University of Arizona over the years. Dr. George Coyne and others have been over studying at the University of Arizona, so it's molto bene. So my experience in Italy was fantastic, and there sure is a connection there. Well, we thank you for your great work, Professor Ilaria Pascucci. She's a fellow of the American Astronomical Society. She's chair of the ExoPag Executive Committee. She is a full professor in the Department of Planetary Science. She has done some great research on winds of change, the James Webb Space Telescope, and details about young star systems. We appreciate you being with us on Wonder Monday, talking about your research, and good luck to you in the future as you look to see how planets are formed and what's out there that we can celebrate in the future. So thank you for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. And I hope that those listening experienced a bit of the excitement we share within our community for this amazing data and are also eager to hear about new science results with James Webb and other facilities.
It's kind of neat what you were talking about, that you were a young student when you kind of got excited about this, and now you're running programs. So we try to inspire some young people to get involved in astronomy and the sciences, and see if they can solve some of the mysteries of the world that have been asked for many, many years. So thank you for the good work that you're doing, especially with the young people in your charge at the University of Arizona.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Great. You're listening to KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk station. And this is the Wonder Series, celebrating the good things at the University of Arizona on Jump in Tucson. When we come back after the break, we'll talk a little bit about a brand new project at the University of Arizona, women's ice hockey, and how that has returned to the University of Arizona. Thank you for listening this morning, and we'll be back after the break on Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is the Wonder Series, where we celebrate the wonderful things going on at the University of Arizona. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host for Jump in Tucson on Friday and on Monday. So Friday we talk about business success stories. On Monday we talk about Wonder. And then General Ted Maxwell does Tuesdays with engagement. Grant Kruger does Wednesdays with Food for Thought. And Tom Moulton does Thursdays with Visit Tucson and Southern Arizona Attractions. Our guest for the segment is Troy Vaughn. He's the Senior Director at Campus Recreation, the beautiful facility at the University of Arizona. Facilities, I should put plural on that because it's more than one facility. And Troy, welcome to Jump in Tucson.
Wonderful. Thank you, and thank you for allowing me to be a part of this.
A point of personal privilege here. I guess there's 6 degrees of separation. I'm married to a wonderful young lady. Her name is Susie Ackerley, Susie Pepper Ackerley. She was the director of aquatics at Campus Recreation for the first decade or so when they first got started. She was there for many years. I know the building well, and I know that pool really well because our little guys were in it quite frequently. So we love Campus Recreation, what you guys do for the students and faculty and community of the University of Arizona. So Troy, before we get started with talking about this new development in your teams that are on campus, let's talk a little bit about how Troy Vaughn got to become a senior director at Campus Recreation.
It's been a wonderful journey. This is year 35 for me in the world of Campus Rec, and so I'm a Midwest guy, and just opportunities were available. And when I interviewed here back in the spring of 2018, I fell in love with it, and I'd never been to Tucson before, so this was all new to me. And the thing that struck me most about this were just the people. And so it was wonderful to see and to hear the passion of the folks here in Tucson and the students on campus, and that gravitated with my family and I. And so here we are now several years later and really enjoying our experience here in Tucson and on campus.
That's great. Well, there's lots going on at the Rec Center. Of course, many of the students participate in daily, if not weekly, routines and exercise and health and wellness and activities and extra sports, intramurals, all sorts of things going on at the Rec Center. You have 33 sports under the Campus Rec umbrella, but one in particular is pretty unique. It's the comeback of the women's hockey team that was here back in the early 2000s, but has come back in a big way. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Would love to, Ed. So women's hockey is really, they've started, they're several games in. The record really isn't indicative of what the team is doing and where they are right now. We did get our first win a couple of weeks ago up in at GCU, which was wonderful to celebrate that. But the goal really behind this was kind of as a resolution from the things that we've been working on with the Mosaic Quarter, and knowing that we've got this new facility coming that's going to be at the Keno Sportsplex here in town. And we knew several years ago, Ed, that there was a large number of youth that were interested in hockey, and in particular, the growing number of women and girls that are playing hockey, not just in Tucson, but in Phoenix and statewide and nationally as well. And so we wanted to capitalize on that. Quite honestly, when we started this process in 2018, when I arrived on campus, we didn't even realize that there was a previous women's ice hockey team here. And so as we went through the processes and we learned that and we got engaged with that alumni group, and they've been incredibly supportive with this. But our first goal was to hire a coach, and Caitlin Hogan is that coach, and she's done just amazing things. And she's a fireball of energy, and she's recruited nationally and internationally, about 25 players to be here. And what is great is we also have a few players on the team that are juniors or seniors that were already students here that tried out for the team and played hockey in previous days. But it's a wonderful thing, and it really meets a goal that we have to open up for girls and for women. And in particular on campus, it meets a number of goals that we have for equality and everything associated with that. So for us, it's a win-win. They're going to be an integral part of the new Iceplex when we open that facility up in the fall of 26, along with the men's team. And we expect nothing but just great things moving forward out of this program.
And Caitlin is certainly she's a good get, as they say, an All-American in her own right. An Olympian in both hockey and, of all things, weightlifting, and yet she kind of has gravitated. And if you read about her story, she kind of was here in Tucson because of her being married, and her in-laws were here, so they came to Tucson, and she happened to look up and see that there was a job posted for a head coach at the U of A, and she just kind of by happenstance applied, and lo and behold, here she is building a women's hockey team in the desert, and it's pretty amazing. She also says something which I think is really important about club sports, and she indicated that, as you just said, the record is really not the issue here. We're not trying, I mean, it'd be nice to win a national championship in club sport hockey, but that's not really the goal, at least in the first year or two. It's to build a program and to build some confidence and trust with the players and amongst the league. So this is a lofty goal, but it's an important goal, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. It's about culture. And I think it's building a culture, you know, like you said, we're not going to be a national championship team. We may not even make the tournament here in the first couple of years. But I think Coach Hogan is building today for what may come, you know, when the building opens. I mean, the new facility is a game changer for us from terms of interest and community interest and student interest first and foremost, but from a recruiting standpoint as well. And while both men's and women's hockey are club sports, they're not NCAA sports per se, but people kind of assume they are, right? And so it's kind of a fun thing. And, you know, they're funded. There's interesting funding models for all the sport club teams, but they're actual program entities of campus recreation here. And so, you know, we're able to give some unique funding things for them, but we still ask for donations and we still try to get the word out on how we can get them to survive. And it's expensive to take trips to North Dakota and to St. Louis and all of that. So, yeah.
So what is the difference between an NC2A sport like football, basketball, et cetera, that are obviously high dollar, high volume, high fan base kind of sports, and these club sports, which you have 33 of them, that are, you know, the fans are friends and family maybe, and there might only be 50 or a couple hundred people watching a smaller sport, whereas, you know, 50,000 in the stadium to watch a football game. That's an obvious difference. But what is the difference between campus recreation sports, club sports, and like the NC2A intercollegiate sports?
And it's a great question. So sport clubs, and we have about 1,200 student athletes that are sport club members. And basically, the difference is all of our players, are the vast majority of our students who are club members, are non-scholarship. And in fact, about 90% of the club teams that participate, these students are paying to play in the sports that they do, and that's how these sport clubs are funded. Varsity athletics isn't like that. While Title IX implications are evident for the NCAA side, they're also evident for the sport club side too. And so, you know, we're always looking at that from a legality standpoint as well, and trying to equalize opportunities for both men and women. But these student athletes that are sport club members are passionate, and they may not be coming to the university to particularly play you know, pickleball or to play ultimate frisbee. But we do have some of our higher level sport club teams like the hockeys, men's and women's, and the rugbies, who actively recruit and who are actually going out there and trying to get high quality men and women to come and participate on these teams. And so, you know, the super club teams, which I throw the hockeys in and I throw the rugbies in and maybe men's lacrosse, who are long standing programs, you know, with the university that go back to the 1980s and 1990s, you know, these are 40 and 50 year programs that have a huge alumni following and are supported incredibly well. The main difference, Ed, is the passion. And while varsity athletes are passionate about their sport, they're incredibly engaged with what they do and in the community. But, you know, for a men's hockey game against ASU, we're putting 3,000 people in the TCC. Right. And so it's
pretty amazing.
Just an amazing activity to be able to see and be a part of. And yet, no, these are students, and then sometimes I call them kids and I shouldn't, but these are students who are paying to play, and sometimes these students are paying $2,000-$4,000 a year to play in the sport they love.
Great. When we come back after the break, we'll talk about the Mosaic Quarter Iceplex at Keno Sports Complex and talk a little bit more about women's hockey coming back to the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host. This is the Monday Wonder Series, where we talk about the good things happening at the University of Arizona. Our guest for this segment is Troy Vaughn. He's the senior director at Campus Recreation, the facility that you see adjacent to the football stadium that is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful rec center. They have some other facilities around campus, but they provide health and wellness for and sporting opportunities for many, many students on campus, all of whom are welcome at the Campus Recreation Center. So welcome back, Troy. You had talked about the Mosaic Quarter Iceplex at Keno Sports Complex, the Frank Knotts project that's going on with Pima County, and to develop a pretty interesting project over there with sporting fields and even some hotels and some restaurants and so forth to make it kind of a unique sportsplex for people. But of special note is the ice rink, which is it's going to be really important for the hockey teams, right?
Oh, absolutely. When we first were, so going back to 2000 and I would say 12, the men's hockey alumni group was really active in trying to figure out an alternative to the TCC. And the TCC has been great, the Tucson Convention Center. But with the advent of the Roadrunners and the push for more community-based activities, concerts and the like with that, you know, the push down has been affected, you know, and we don't have the same kind of use that we, you know, we struggle for dates and we struggle for home dates in the evening. We're playing games at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So early on, we knew to continue the success of the teams and to bring women's hockey in, we needed to look at a different facility. And there's been facilities in our town for a long time, but there hasn't been for a while, right? And one sheet of ice doesn't do it for all the kids and all the things. So this project that Mr. Knott has put together and is coming a reality is a big boon to us in the hockey world. But first and foremost, it's a big boon to students on our campus. And so we're excited, not just for men's hockey, women's hockey, sled hockey, which is coming through our adaptive sports program, but we're excited for the fact that students are going to be able to utilize a facility that is uncommon in Southern Arizona, right? They can come over and they can learn how to ice skate. They can learn how to curl. They can learn how to play broom ball on the ice. We can have special events in there. They can come over and have dates or bring a significant other or a partner and just enjoy a facility that is something that they're not used to, in particular, you know, with folks that are born and raised in Southern Arizona. So we're excited to be able to make this a reality, first and foremost for our students. And it's just an extra kind of fun thing to call it a new home for both the men's and women's ice hockey programs.
We're talking with Troy Vaughn. He's the Senior Director of Campus Recreation at the University of Arizona. One of the things that caught my eye was the concept of the adaptive athletics folks getting involved with the ice and doing the ice sled sport, which is kind of a unique way to involve the world famous, in fact, adaptive athletics program at the University of Arizona. So this is a nice integration of those athletes into the ice as well.
Absolutely. And it's something that we've been working very closely with Peter Hughes, who's the director for the adaptive athletics program, and something that we've had on our radar for quite a while. And again, our job is to create equality on campus and equality for students first and foremost. So we already, and I know Pete would tell you this if he was here, we've already had a ton of interest from men and women alike around the country who would like to be a part of this. Sled hockey is huge in the Paralympic world and it's huge in the Paralympics. And so these are very, very, very specialized but incredible athletes that do some wonderful things sitting on a sled on the ice and they play hockey. And what is really great about Mr. Knott and what he is doing is he's adapted one of the rinks to be a sled hockey rink specifically for this group and these group of people. So when we get on board in 2026, we're hopefully going to have this team kind of up and ready. We have a lot of work to do to get to that point, but we're getting closer.
Hockey in the desert, it's know, the professional hockey team seems to be holding its own and doing well. They were just on with Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson last week. What are your plans for promoting hockey to students, faculty, and staff? And then, you know, playing off that good relationship that our fans in Tucson have with professional hockey, to have that come on over and support the new women's hockey team. How are you going to build some momentum so that we can get some people out to some of these games?
Great question. So the men's games, you know, we've had three home games already, and, you know, a couple of the games were right at 1,000, and the first ASU game was right at 2,200, which is great for us. We'd love to see more. The women's opening game was a doubleheader with the men's, and so that is the only women's game that we're charging for the entire season. So all of the other women's games are going to be free. So we encourage families, community, everybody to come in and see a great new program at the university to come in. So that first and foremost is probably the one most appealing part is they don't have to pay anything to come in and watch a women's hockey game take place in the TCC. And schedules and everything are listed on our women's hockey website. As far as the men's hockey team goes, you know, they have such a history and they have such a following, you know, and we do have to pay for use of the TCC. So we do have to charge for tickets for that. But we are really, really intentional to keep those prices as low as we possibly can. And for the students as well, we offer free tickets to the first 100 students that come in the door, and then we discount tickets for them as well. So we get a ton of students that come. If you've been to one of the games, they're excited. They're always sitting down there next to the ice and having a great time and giving opposing teams a really hard time, as they should be, but we have a blast in doing that. You asked about the community as well. We do have some scheduled community days that are coming up. We work very closely with a lot of the youth. We have Kids Hockey Day that's coming up here in the springtime. We have a Saturday afternoon matinee game that we do and that we promote. We have Pucks and Paws coming back as well, so you can bring your favorite dog to the rink, and we do that as a fundraiser for a group that's coming up here in January. So a ton of different events that are planned, you know, kind of based around hockey, but again, trying to get the community involved and just aware of what we can do and how we can have a fun time at the TCC for everybody.
That's great. Well, it's great to have a women's hockey back at the University of Arizona. It's been quite a drought here in the desert, and it's nice to have the women skating on ice, and maybe we'll get to a place where, you know, it took a while for the women's basketball team to fill McHale Center, but now it's as equally exciting as the men's program is, and I'm sure that the women's hockey will be as equally as exciting as what the men's hockey team has been doing for years. So congratulations to you and to Caitlin Hogan, the All-American coach, and the young women that are out there every day getting better and competing against some pretty formidable opponents in the hockey world. So Troy Vaughn, Senior Director of Campus Recreation, thank you for sharing your perspective on the new women's hockey team here at the University of Arizona. We appreciate you having on Jump in Tucson.
Thank you. Come out and see it.
Yeah, I'm going to be there, and I'm sure we can get some listeners out there too. Well, we thank you all for joining us. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you. And who knows, maybe you'll be live on the air. And don't forget the U of A marching band. We are still raising some funds to try and feed them at home football games. So if you get a chance, go to coachesforcharity.org and give us a little donation. Jump in Tucson is produced and directed by Ackerley Advertising. William Ackerley is the executive producer, and the program broadcast from Bustos Media Studios at KVOI 1030 AM Radio. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you jump in Tucson.